It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Liberia tries to contain the Ebola outbreak following an attack on a Monrovia quarantine center. Another vicious attack by Boko Haram gunmen. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Liberian officials are urging suspected Ebola patients to return to an isolation center attacked and looted by armed men late Saturday. The government says 17 patients remain at large after the attack on the clinic in the West Point neighborhood of Monrovia. Looters carried away potentially contaminated mattresses, bedding, and gloves, raising concerns of further spreading of the often deadly virus. Information Minister Lewis Brown warned the country faces the potential of a difficult-to-control situation. Sierra Leonean Health Minister Miata Kargbo warned the country's fight against the disease has been hampered by a lack of medical personnel. David McLaughlin Carr is the UN resident coordinator in Freetown.
The appeal I would just announce is for $18.13 million, and it is basically for the government of Sierra Leone to address clinical management, to address surveillance and contact tracing, to address social mobilization and public awareness, and to address the very necessary aspect of logistics.
Nearly 350 people have died so far from Ebola in Sierra Leone. More than 1,140 have died across West Africa since the outbreak was first detected in Guinea in February. Cameroon has closed all borders with Nigeria to prevent the spread of the virus, where the death toll stands at 4, the number of confirmed cases at 12. U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria James Entwistle urged authorities Monday to focus on containing the spread of the virus through isolation and screening.
This is an issue where we have to keep working hard. It may last for be with us for a while, but there are some encouraging signs. The Emergency Operations Center, I understand, is working well. The isolation ward, I understand, is working well. So this is an example where we just have to, as part of the broad partnership between our two countries, we have to just keep collaborating and cooperating and working hard.
World Health Organization Monday urged the affected countries in West Africa to screen people departing international airports, seaports, and major land border crossings. Witnesses told the French press agency that suspected Islamist militants of Boko Haram killed at least 10 people Sunday as they fled their homes to escape repeated attacks by the insurgent in the Borno state village of Krenua. 6 were killed in the village of Durwa, 4 others in nearby Maforo. Villages across the border in Cameroon, meanwhile, have become deserted as villagers fear more attacks from Boko Haram. Mogi Edwin Kinsica spoke with residents of one of those villages, Fotokol.
Secondary school teacher Asanji Paul is promising never to return to Fotokol.
You cannot be in a place where there's no peace. You know that at any one point in time, your life is not safe.
Truck drivers are refusing to transport food items to the border area, and huge quantities of cotton, onions and other farm produce are piling up. The fleeing residents argue that if traditional rulers, military men and a wife of a deputy prime minister could be kidnapped from the border area, then they as civilians are very much exposed to Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In Libya, a member of former General Khalifa Haftar's militia says his planes were responsible for airstrikes on Islamist militia in Tripoli early Monday. There had been speculation NATO or U.S. warplanes were involved, but officials quickly denied that. Rival militia have been battling for control of the city. It's the worst violence since the 2011 overthrow of dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The medical charity group Heal Africa says there were nearly 3,000 victims of sexual violence in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo in the first half of the year. The group, which operates a hospital in Goma, says many of the women seek medical care to prevent HIV infection. Somali police arrested a senior pirate commander in Mogadishu, Mohamed Garfanji, considered the second-ranking leader of the Somali pirate industry. A building in Johannesburg, South Africa, under renovation, collapsed Monday, killing at least 8 people. Several others were injured. A new study by conservation experts say poachers have killed an estimated 100,000 elephants between 2010 and 2012 across Africa, as demand for ivory in China and other Asian nations remains high. The study monitored Kenya's Samburu National Reserve and elephant fatalities to extrapolate their findings. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Barack Obama says U.S. Attorney General will travel to Ferguson, Missouri on Wednesday. He will get an update on the federal probe into the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager by a white police officer that has sparked days of violent protests.
While I understand the passions and the anger that arise over the death of Michael Brown, giving into that anger by looting or carrying guns and even attacking the police only serves to raise tensions and stir chaos. It undermines rather than advancing justice.
President Barack Obama on tensions in Ferguson, Missouri. Also, Southern African leaders ask the United Nations to help remove Rwandan rebels from Eastern Congo. A UN agency warns of targeting health workers in conflict and humanitarian crisis. And the Ghana Medical Association will meet with Parliament to discuss the country's readiness to fight Ebola.
We are lucky to have had a series of warnings so that we will be in a better position to be prepared when the disease eventually comes in country. But I'm afraid as of today, we are prepared on paper, we're not prepared on the ground.
That's Dr. Kwabena Opoku-Edusei of the Ghana Medical Association. Also, the president of the Sierra Leone Medical Student Association talks about the effect of Ebola on the country's infrastructure. All that plus Marco Ume's sports coming up on Daybreak Africa. In remarks to the press Monday afternoon, President Barack Obama announced that Attorney General Eric Holder will meet with local leaders of Ferguson, Missouri on Wednesday. He said the Department of Justice has opened an independent federal civil rights investigation into the death of Michael Brown. The unarmed teenager was killed on August 9th by police officer in a suburb of St. Louis. In remarks to the press Monday afternoon, President Barack Obama announced that Attorney General Eric Holder will meet with local leaders of Ferguson, Missouri on Wednesday. He said the Department of Justice has opened an independent federal civil rights investigation into the death of Michael Brown. The unarmed teenager was killed on August 9th by a police officer in a suburb of St. Louis. The Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigations, FBI, is already on the ground and devoting considerable resources to the case.
The Attorney General himself will be traveling to Ferguson on Wednesday to meet with the FBI agents and DOJ personnel conducting the federal criminal investigation, and he will receive an update from them on their progress. He will also be meeting with other leaders in the community whose support is so critical to bringing about peace and calm in Ferguson. Ronald Davis, the director of the DOJ's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, or COPS, is also traveling to Ferguson tomorrow to work with police officials on the ground. We've also had experts from the DOJ's Community Relations Service working in Ferguson since the days after the shooting to foster conversations among local stakeholders and reduce tensions among the community.
President Obama said it's clear that the vast majority of people in the streets are peacefully protesting. A small minority, he said, are not.
While I understand the passions and the anger that arise over the death of Michael Brown, giving into that anger by looting or carrying guns and even attacking the police only serves to raise tensions and stir chaos. It undermines rather than advancing justice. Let me also be clear that our constitutional rights to speak freely, to assemble, and to report in the press must be vigilantly safeguarded, especially in moments like these. There's no excuse for excessive force by police or any action that denies people the right to protest peacefully. Ours is a nation of laws for the citizens who live under them and for the citizens who enforce them.
President Obama said at this moment, Americans need to realize their shared humanity to seek understanding and healing. He said in too many communities, there's a lack of trust between local citizens and law enforcement.
In too many communities, too many young men of color are left behind and seen only as objects of fear. And through initiatives like My Brother's Keeper, I'm personally committed to changing both perception and reality. And already we're making some significant progress as people of goodwill of all races are ready to chip in. But that requires that we build and not tear down. And that requires we listen and not just shout. That's how we're going to move forward together.
He said in the long term, there are things that can be done to improve community police relations. He also says government can work with police, clergy, businesses, parents, and young people across the country to help unemployed young men and to promote trust in the criminal justice system. As president, he says, he must make sure the investigation into events in Ferguson is transparent with accountability, allowing people to have confidence in a just and fair process and outcome. That means, he said, distinguishing between peaceful protesters and those using Brown's death to engage in criminal behavior. An independent autopsy at the request of the family showed the 18-year-old was shot 6 times on August 9, including 2 bullets to the top of his head. His family says he was trying to surrender. The president of the Ghana Medical Association, or GMA, plans today, Tuesday, to brief Parliament about the country's preparations to handle Ebola, which has so far affected 4 West African countries. The group's president, Dr. Kwabena Opoku-Duse, expressed concern that the country appears ill-prepared to handle the lethal virus, noting that medical gear bought by the administration to help combat its spread is not enough. The World Health Organization estimates that Ebola has left over 1,069 dead. The affected countries include Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Nigeria. Opoku-Duse told me earlier that medical professionals need to be adequately prepared to handle infected patients.
We are lucky to have had a series of warnings so that we will be in a better position to be prepared when the disease eventually comes in country. But I'm afraid as of today, we are prepared on paper, we're not prepared on the ground. As I speak with you tomorrow morning, we have a scheduled meeting interaction with the Parliamentary Select Committee on Health. The Ghana Medical Association is going to make a presentation to them about how we can help alleviate the problems that stuck us in the face and how we expect them to also do this part of the bargain. As of today, we have here about 14 areas. But then the actual treatment and management areas are yet to be set up. Our borders, though they are white, are not well manned, they're not well screened. We have reports that people just pass through from all manner of areas, countries that are infected, into our country. So we are going to discuss that tomorrow. As of today, as long as we have a case today or tomorrow, I'm afraid we may not be able to manage the problem.
Officials in the country who are saying that some form of materials that will be needed to treat cases of Ebola when it comes to Ghana have been put in place. Are you saying that those statements are not necessarily the truth?
No, there's some level of equipment in some of our centers, but then I'm afraid they are not enough. And we are here to do training for health workers and doctors and other health workers so that they have the confidence to screen and to manage the disease. As with you now, the level of education for the average Ghanaian is also low. So they are saying that, yes, our government is doing something, but we are afraid it's not enough. Our ministry is said to have released about 6 million Ghana cities out of a total of 1.5 Ghana cities. What they are saying is that, yes, we want proper action there, patient and treatment centers to be set up properly, and doctors and other health staff trained properly so that they can have the needed confidence to manage their disease if we have some in-country.
Dr. Eduse, you said the GMA, your organization, is meeting Parliament Tuesday. How will you cooperate with Parliament as well as the government to combat this disease since you have the expertise?
All doctors who are in the forefront, who are public health physicians, are all members of the Ghana Medical Association. And you realize that this disease is new in Ghana, and for most of our doctors, public health physicians, who are in the forefront. So, yes, we don't have 100% expertise. I know that they are making effort to tap the knowledge of the World Health Organization. I don't know how soon they are coming in country to give some level of training. The little that we have, men are working around the clock to see that are going to do the right thing. We of the Ghana Medical Association are also prepared to encourage our members to assist the program. We advocate for good health care for all Ghanaians. We advocate that the right things are done to avert any disaster.
Dr. Kwabena Opoku-Dusei is president of the Ghana Medical Association, or GMA. He spoke with me earlier from the capital, Accra. Asad Navid is a six-year medical student at Sierra Leone's only medical school. He was planning to take his final exams in October and become a doctor. But in May, Ebola broke out in West Africa. Today, it's not certain how the outbreak will affect the plans of medical students. It's already claimed the life of the country's leading Ebola expert, Dr. Sheikh Umar Khan. He taught Navid and his classmate internal medicine earlier this year. Navid, who is the president of the Sierra Leone Medical Student Association, tells reporter Ricky Shryok he worries how this Ebola outbreak will affect Sierra Leone's health infrastructure.
It's really affecting the healthcare workers because, first of all, we have lost two prominent doctors. We have lost about 20 nurses now who are working in the frontline Ebola treatment centers. So what happened, for example, in our hospital in Freetown, at Connaught Hospital, when a senior doctor passed away, the junior doctors went to strike because there were lack of gloves and adequate protective equipment. So basically the hospital was empty. And there are other instances where nurses got scared and they stopped working. Here too, some doctors didn't go. So but later on, some of the items were provided, so some are returning now. And at the same time, some of the items provided were substandard, so that was another issue.
Is it coming from the health ministry, the protective equipment?
Yeah, it's coming from the Ministry of Health.
Does this outbreak make you even more worried for the future of healthcare in Sierra Leone?
Well, it is certainly making me worry because already our healthcare system is or was very poor. There's only one medical school in the country, and the average number of doctors that graduate from this medical college every year is about 25 to 30. So basically in the country we get 25 to 30 new doctors per year for the 6 million population.
Do many of those doctors leave Sierra Leone after they get their medical degree?
Some leave Sierra Leone, like 10, 15 leave Sierra Leone, not immediately, like after the 2 years house concert, because there is no postgraduate training program here or residency. There is no postgraduate, so you cannot specialize in a particular field of medicine. For example, you can be a general doctor with your MD, PhD. For you to become a surgeon, you need to do an extra postgraduate training. That one is not done here. So because of that, a lot of medical students leave the country, like 10, 15, 20. So at the end of the day, what happens is the country gets only like 10 new doctors for the year that remain in the country. So already the number of new doctors we are getting here is very low. And the overall doctors we have in the country is also very low. And now that doctors have started dying with Ebola virus, the future looks dangerous for us in Sierra Leone.
Do you personally know any healthcare workers or anyone who has gotten the virus?
Dr. Sheikh Umar Khan was our lecturer. Yeah, he taught us internal medicine in January, and he was very enthusiastic, very passionate, very good lecturer. We knew him personally. He was a very good man. He was someone we knew very closely.
That was Asad Navid, president of the Sierra Leone Medical Student Association. He was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Freetown. Leaders of the Southern Africa Development Community, or SADC, have asked the United Nations to assist in removing members of a Rwandan rebel group from Eastern Congo. The 15-member bloc made the appeal at the end of a two-day summit in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, from where Sebastian Imhofu reports for VOA.
In their communique after the two-day meeting under a theme of economic transformation, the leaders of Southern African countries resolved to speed up industrialization of their countries to fight poverty. They said the region was generally peaceful and stable, but appealed to the United Nations to help address the situation in the Great Lakes region. The Democratic Republic of Congo, a Southern African Development Community member, is hoping to rid its eastern provinces of rebel groups that have kept the region in the grips of chaos and violence for years. Here is Stegomena Lawrence Taxi, SADC Executive Secretary.
On the Democratic Republic of Congo, summit also called upon the United Nations in cooperation with the African Union to play its role in repatriating the FDLR elements that have voluntarily surrendered and disarmed to provide them with temporary resettlement in third countries outside the Great Lake region.
FDLR refers to the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, a Rwandan Hutu rebel group comprised in part of many who took part in Rwanda's genocide in 1994. According to the SADC communique, the region's leaders also endorsed a regional food and nutrition security strategy for 2015-2025 to improve food security because they said humanitarian assistance and malnutrition still remained a challenge. The leaders were silent on issues of human rights abuses and poverty, which civic organizations wanted addressed. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe.
It's Tuesday, August 19, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. The World Health Organization warns of a growing trend of targeting health workers and hospitals during conflict and humanitarian crisis. The UN agency issued the warning to mark World Humanitarian Day, August 19. VOA's Jody Kapwa reports.
The World Health Organization says that major emergencies around the world are increasing in scale, complexity, and frequency. It says that's denying many people their fundamental right to health. Dr. Richard Brennan is director of the WHO's Department of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response.
Over the last 18 months is probably the busiest period in the history of humanitarian work, and that's due to a number of high-profile and very impactful emergencies in places such as Syria, South Sudan, Central African Republic, Iraq, and the Ebola epidemic right now in West Africa, not to mention all the other crises that aren't quite as prominent, such as Somalia and Yemen and Eastern Congo.
The recent conflict in Gaza is another example. Health workers, clinics, patients, and ambulances have been deliberately targeted in those conflicts. Brennan says that denies many people medical care when they need it most. In Pakistan and Nigeria, those administering polio vaccines have been attacked. Most of them are women. Dr. Brennan says it's a violation of international law.
It's the abandonment of this widely held principle that's been around for hundreds, if not thousands, of years of the sanctity of healthcare.
He says the main victims of conflicts in the 21st century are civilians.
We're seeing this terribly right now in northern Iraq, of course, but we've seen it in South Sudan, in Central African Republic. In Central African Republic, you've seen whole religious and ethnic groups forced from their communities, religious and ethnic cleansing. And underlying all of this are political issues. And unfortunately, the political leaders, the community leaders, aren't stepping forward to address the underlying causes. And it's left to the humanitarians to come in and apply band-aid measures, essentially.
He says millions of people are suffering as a result. The WHO official has a message for the leaders of the warring parties.
For the leaders of those groups, I'd ask them to move beyond their own greed, their own lust for power, their own pride, and sit down with their counterparts and come up with a compromise so that their people can live in peace.
The World Health Organization says it's working with its partners to better document, prevent, and respond to attacks on health workers. It calls caring for the sick and vulnerable in the world's most difficult circumstances one of the most pressing responsibilities of the international community. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
New research identifies a chink in the polio vaccine's armor. A new study says a mutated polio virus that slipped through the vaccine's defenses was behind an unusually lethal recent outbreak. An intensive vaccination campaign was able to stop the 2010 outbreak in the Republic of Congo. But the authors say their research shows new and dangerous strains may emerge as polio eradication nears, and high rates of vaccination are the best available protection. VOA Steve Baragona reports.
Polio usually paralyzes its victims. It's not typically fatal. But in the Republic of Congo outbreak, nearly half of the 445 people who got sick with the virus died. And virologist Felix Drexler at the University of Bonn says the patients were unusual in another way.
About half of them remember taking three doses of live vaccine. And that made it even more bizarre because if they had been vaccinated, they shouldn't be sick.
When Drexler and colleagues in Europe and Africa studied the virus, they found it had some never-before-seen mutations in a critical part of its outer coat. Those mutations were in the place where antibodies that fight the virus would normally attach.
And so we thought, wow, maybe that could affect the ability of the antibodies in human blood to neutralize that virus. And yes, it did.
As they report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the researchers tested the virus in Germany against blood samples from people with better-than-average vaccination coverage.
Up to 30% were actually had to be considered completely unprotected.
The Republic of Congo had been polio-free before the 2010 outbreak. It took four subsequent nationwide immunization drives targeting every man, woman, and child to stop the mutated virus. Drexler says the effort worked because just about everyone got vaccinated, and with the most potent form of the vaccine. The virus has not been seen since, though Drexler says it may still be lurking out there somewhere. And he added there may be others that also can evade the vaccine's protection. Although the vaccine works, Drexler says,
the question that the experts are asking, so is the vaccine good enough to enable us to eradicate poliovirus?
Experts say polio eradication is in its final stages. There have been fewer than 150 cases anywhere in the world this year, and the virus is found regularly in just three countries. Virologist Olin Q with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the problem in Congo was not the vaccine. It was civil unrest in the 1990s and early 2000s that had disrupted vaccination campaigns. He notes that the vaccine has eliminated the poliovirus everywhere it has been used. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sport. Here's Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin at the Olympic Youth Games in Nanjing, China. 16-year-old Tunisian Landulsi Nuha clinched Africa's first medal at the Games on Monday. Nuha bagged a bronze medal in the girls' 53-kilogram weightlifting contest. In 3-on-3 basketball, Tunisia bounced back to pip Brazil 14-13 after losing to Spain 16-11 in the boys' contest, while Egypt beat Chinese Taipei 16-11 in the girls' competition. Today, Tuesday, Egypt play the Czech Republic and the United States of America, while Tunisia challenge Romania in the boys' event. In seven-a-side rugby, hosts China dismissed Tunisia 34-0, Argentina beat Kenya 32-5, and Japan edged Kenya 27-24. While in the girls' contest, Canada outclassed Tunisia 43-12. Today, Tuesday, Tunisia play the United States of America as Kenya challenge Fiji. Turning to football, ARC rivals Rayon Sports and Rwanda's military side APR clash in what is expected to be an explosive Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championship quarterfinal in Kigali, Rwanda today, Tuesday. Rwanda police face Burundi's Atletico in the day's other quarterfinal. Meanwhile, Nigeria has qualified for the 2015 Orange African Under-20 Championships after Lesotho failed to travel to Nigeria to honor their weekend fixture. The Confederation of African Football Secretary General Hicham El Amrani revealed in Egypt, Cairo on Monday. Amrani says the return leg between Nigeria and Lesotho is automatically cancelled. Elsewhere, Guinea will host Togo in their 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier next month in Morocco, the Guinea Football Federation revealed on Monday. This is in compliance with a directive from the Confederation of African Football that they host their match at a neutral venue. This is a precaution to stem the spread of the deadly Ebola virus that is ravaging part of the Mano River region, which covers Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Finally, the Democratic Republic of Congo has settled for a local coach, Florent Ibenge, to guide their national team, the Leopards, in their 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. Coach Ibenge is also head coach at AS Vita, the Kinshasa-based club that has already qualified for the semifinals of the Orange Africa Champions League with a game in hand. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
And that's it for this Tuesday, August 19 edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, managing editor William Eagle, as well as sports editor Marco Uma, I'm Peter Clote in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.